If you're a fan of the Resilient Recruiter podcast, I've got exciting news. I'm hosting a special event for recruitment business owners in London on September 17th and 18th, and I'd love you to join us. If you want to achieve your full potential, you need to surround yourself with the right people. At the Recruitment Coach Live Summit, you'll get to meet some of my podcast guests in person, hang out with us, and share ideas. Some of the folks I've interviewed on the show will either be attending or speaking at the summit. Early bird pricing is still available. Register now by visiting recruitmentcoach.com/summit.
I don't think AI will ever replace our business. We evaluate skill sets. We evaluate performance. We evaluate motivation and drive, right? And so those kind of things, you know, I don't think you can, AI is ever going to deliver that to you.
Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby. And I'm here with Andy Miller.
And I've made more mistakes than I can count, right? And life is about learning and failing a lot and then picking yourself up and, you know, trying again, right?
Andy started BrainWorks in 1991 and has grown it into a 50-person search firm with billings around $13
million. In 2019, I took on two partners, John and Steve Levitt, who were serial entrepreneurs and first and foremost, amazing human beings. And so I knew that the partnership could work. And literally from the, beginning of 2020, so it's 5 years now, we are 7X in revenue and we've grown from like 7 to 50 people, right? And so
he continues to lead the consumer products practice, where his clients range from large Fortune 50 companies to small entrepreneurial organizations. A couple of things to know about Andy. Number one, he received a master's degree in counseling psychology and actually spent the first 3 years in social services settings.
I spent 3 years in counseling and then I met my wife of 40 plus years. And so I got to a place where, you know, I loved the work and that economically I just couldn't see making it work. I could barely pay my bills, right? I had student loans, things like that. And I just didn't, unless I was going to go back and get a PhD, I didn't want to spend another 5 years in school. And so I transitioned into sales.
Second thing is, his psychology background combined with his passion for competitive sports is the basis of his philosophy, which is to help clients win the competitive war for talent by assessing, training, and developing people towards greater productivity.
We used to have somebody called a chief funnel officer, like, and we still do things where we will create internal things. We have 4 or 5 clubs. We've got a book club. We've got a parent club, you know, where people can connect over a subject matter that isn't necessarily business. There's plenty of time to connect around business topics. You know, we also want people to get to know people as people. It's just one more commitment to show that we care about the whole person, not just what you can produce.
Andy, welcome. Thank you so much for doing this.
My pleasure.
So we know each other through the Pinnacle Society. How long have you been part of Pinnacle?
2011. So I guess 13, going on 14 years.
Wow. Fantastic. And so we've met a few times now. I sat beside you in Savannah, Georgia, I remember, for at least one of the sessions. Now, I'm curious, I know that you're passionate about sports, but do you have a sports background yourself?
Yeah, I played a lot of sports growing up. I played, you know, basketball and, you know, football and, you know, just about every sport you can name. You know, baseball's my first love. I still actually play in over 50 and over 60 hardball leagues, so believe it or not.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, fantastic. So, I mean, well, let me take it back to the beginning, Sex. So you did counseling psychology in school, but then how did you end up working in recruitment?
So I spent 3 years in counseling and then I met my wife of, you know, 40 plus years. And so I got to a place where, you know, I loved the work and that economically I just couldn't see making it work. I could barely pay my bills, right? I had student loans, things like that. And I just didn't, unless I was going to go back and get a PhD, I didn't want to spend another 5 years in school. And so I transitioned into sales. I spent, I think, 9 years in telecommunications, selling telephone systems to businesses. And actually, you know, one of my clients was Management Recruiters International. So as I would sell the franchise owner, you know, I'd develop a relationship, get to know them. And then in 90-ish, you know, I started getting a little antsy of what was going to be next in my career. And I started looking around about, you know, business opportunities. I almost went into business with my father-in-law, and God rest his soul, he was a great man, but probably the best decision I made was to not go there. And I had looked at MRI, and then I looked at this venture with my father-in-law, and then that blew up. And then so I came back and I bought a franchise. I went to training in fall of 91, September of 91, out in Cleveland, Ohio. And I opened my office in December of 91 as a management recruiter's franchise, which I was in for, you know, a good, I want to say 2005 or 2006, you know, it served me and then it didn't serve me. And so, you know, we had made a name change around the late 90s just because I thought there was just a proliferation of too many offices and we were looking to differentiate ourselves.
Fantastic. So BrainWorks is a unique name for a search firm. What's the genesis of that?
Interesting. So working with the consultant taught me once to honor the teacher. So I had MRI had come out with something called InterExec, which was intriguing to me. I was only 2 years in business anyway. I partnered with a man named Bill Adams, and we created a company where we were trying to capture, you know, full service business to be, you know, like national accounts and be able to do, you know, do both search and consulting together. Bill had a management consulting background. Anyway, we set up a sub company where Bill was a partner. We had one name and ultimately we changed that to BrainWorks. And then, you know, when Bill and I parted ways, he went off to do more consulting and I kept the name because I loved it and I just thought it was different. Right. And so I've gotten a lot of compliments around it. So I always try to differentiate, right? There were so many people that, you know, Joe's consulting firm or group, you know, so I just wanted something that, you know, conveyed intelligence, right, in the marketplace.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it does sound more like a consulting practice, right? And search firms often have like Miller and Associates or something like
what I didn't want. Exactly.
Yeah. 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 Okay. Fantastic. So, and then here we are, 91. I can't even count how many years that is.
33 years. A lot of years.
33. That is incredible. Like that is an achievement by itself, just being, not only still being in business, but you've actually scaled a really successful firm. I was looking at your website earlier and you know, must have been a journey. What do you attribute your success to, Andy? Like, you know, going from one guy to 50 people and having a practice where you have, well, a firm where you have multiple practice areas, you have, you know, a leadership team in place, you have senior recruiters, you have, you know, a whole stable of talent. What do you put that down to?
Yeah. So listen, I've made more mistakes than I can count, right? And life is about learning and failing a lot and then picking yourself up and, you know, trying again, right? So, you know, and MRI was great, you know, but the MRI way was to really hire, you know, people with no experience and train them up and pay them minimum wage. And that I, you know, if I had back all the money that I pissed away on draws, I'd be a lot wealthier today. But so at some point, we decided that that wasn't working, right? And I always wanted to grow. And, you know, the business for many years was too reliant on my personal production, right? And so in 2019, I took on two partners, John and Steve Levitt, who are serial entrepreneurs and are first and foremost amazing human beings. And so I knew that the partnership could work. And literally from the, I guess, beginning of 2020, so it's 5 years now, we are 7X in revenue and we've grown from like 7 to 50 people, right? And so, and what we did is we started to change how we hired and how we brought people into the organization. We started to only look for very experienced and tenured recruiters. And frankly, I found recruiters who recruit recruiters. I've probably paid over $1 million in fees in the last 5 years. And I'm happy to pay, you know, it's funny that, you know, since we're in the same business, and I forever thought, well, that's kind of stupid. I'm a recruiter, but just like we specialize, right? They specialize in bringing you talent. So we look for very specific things in terms of criteria. We bring people in two different levels. We bring them in as practice leaders who are predominantly doing business development in a particular practice. And then when they grow, we help them hire a recruiter or more under them to grow their practice. So that's been, you know, one of the things that has been the secret sauce in allowing us to grow.
Wow. Okay. This is super interesting. I didn't realize that your scale up had been so recent, you know, in the history of your business since 2020. So only like 5 years, you've grown, what did you say, 7 times?
Yeah, I think we were about $2 million. So yeah, pretty close to 7X.
$2 million to $13 million is incredible. And so I'd like to really unpack this because so many of our listeners find themselves where you were in 2020, which is overly reliant on the production, personal production of the owner, right? And so I guess the first question is, what motivated you to want to grow?
You know, I've always wanted to grow. Like, I'd never wanted to be a sole practitioner. I mean, I've probably tried to hire 100 plus people, and I alluded to the model of, you know, training them and working with them. And, you know, we've had a couple successes. I'm proud of. There's a gentleman who works for me named Guy Gomez, who you may have met at the Pinnacle Society. Guy's, I love him like a brother. And, you know, so he came, you know, out of MBA school and joined me, you know, and he was in his, you know, mid-20s or whatever. And he's worked for me for 30 plus years and he's done terrific. And so, you know, we've had, but again, it wasn't a model that was working, right? And so it took me probably too many years to figure out, you know, how to change it. But fortunately, we got to that place. And once we did, we've replicated and we've made mistakes, of course, along the way. We've made a couple bad hires here and there. But by and large, you know, we got a system that is working.
Andy, this is inspiring for me because it wasn't until my late 40s that I started actually scaling beyond a solo practitioner myself. So if you've done it, that's, you know, that's inspiration for me that I can do it as well. Let's go into more detail, though, about what you said. You tried lots of things and they didn't work. Could you give more detail around why do you think you were stuck as a small boutique with, you know, let's say a handful of people? And then what specifically did you have to fix in order to rapidly start growing?
Yeah, I think so. Let's define, you know, in my not just opinion, but expert. Listen, the people who can do business development or client development, this is rainmakers, whatever words you want to use, that's at the top of the food chain of productivity in this business. Let's face it, that's not good or bad. Fulfillment side is the easier side of the business, right? So, and you know, again, we kept hiring people with some sales experience, but limited, no recruiting experience. And then probably the biggest reason why we failed is economics. You know, listen, when I first started, I paid them a minimum wage draw against commission. And that went on for, you know, I don't know, 5 or 10 years. Eventually, I started driving it up. But I still, the amount that I chose to pay people was limited, right? And so, like we've all heard in life, you get what you pay for, right? And so once I took on partners and we infused some capital, we could afford to pay 6 figures for people. Now, you know, again, that's a risk that you take if you're, you know, predominantly you're going to pay people a draw against commission, right? And we, you know, that's the model that's worked and people do very, very well here. We got people, I've had people in our organization making $500,000, $1 million a year. I'm happy to pay, you know, the more they produce, the better off the business is doing. So again, that's, you know, when we looked at our comp model and we realized that we could, you know, to get better talent, you got to pay more, you know, so that's probably, you know, one of several things that we changed that really helped facilitate our growth.
Let's dig into that because the model that you tried for years and years is the same one that many small recruitment firms are still trying to make work, you know, low draw and, you know, bring people in. I don't know if it's, you mentioned getting partners and therefore having capital, but there's also a psychological barrier to hurdle to overcome here, which is if you're paying people six figures, then that means it's going to take longer for you to get an ROI from that investment, right? And recruiters and recruiting firms think typically shorter term, like I need this person to be paying for themselves within 3 months or whatever the time frame is. Otherwise, this is not going to work. And so having the mindset of, look, if I'm serious about growing a business, I need the top talent, just like our clients, right? It's funny because the things we tell our clients they need to do are not necessarily the same things that we try and do ourselves, right, to grow a business. We try and, like, it's a little Mickey Mouse sometimes the way search firms operate. And, you know, and yet we're placing executives with companies where on big packages and so on. But at the same time, well, okay, so let's talk about, you know, risk and minimizing that. Hiring winners, picking the right people, I know is something that you're good at. So I'd love to hear your strategies around that. But
go ahead. Well, first of all, you know, like I said, we've worked with a handful of recruiters who specialize in placing recruiters, right? So just like our business, we're now, you know, we've had some referrals where people have come in and done well. But, you know, again, like when we're serious and we want to hire in a specific vertical or not, we'll go to these recruiting firms and tell them we're looking for this talent. So, and we have a particular standard. We're looking for somebody typically who's at a 500K and above biller that we think we can help them grow to $1 million plus. Our goal is to have really to help have business units within business units, right? Right now we have, I lose track, or 12 or 15 different practices, right? And not all those practices. And you're going to get somebody who wants to be a sole practitioner that we bring in and bill $500,000-$700,000. Maybe they have one person under. And if that's all they want to do, that's okay, right? Yeah. I mean, the other part that we can talk about also is, I think, to sustain where you're at, I think from my perspective, you want to build a culture that retains people, right? I mean, listen, if you've spent the money and now they're productive and you've invested that and they're going to leave because they don't like the environment or the people, now you got a different problem. But so again, I would say you need to make obviously you want to have standards and, you know, goals and things that they're going to hit certain expectations, right? But, you know, again, you've got to say, like, for example, we started interim and we knew that it was going to take us 18 months to 2 years. That was a $300,000-$400,000 investment that we made. And now, 2025, our interim accounting and finance is the number one practice, right? So, so again, it's, you said it earlier, are you willing to make investments that might take 18 months, 2 years or longer to pay off, right? I mean, but again, if you do it right, if you evaluate talent right, if you hold them accountable right, you know, then, you know, you're going to get a return on your investment. Let me say one more thing. So we talked about, you're familiar with the book Top Grading?
Yes.
So the comment you made earlier, we started laughing at, we used to recommend that our clients top grade, right? Have you read? We used to give them the books. And then it took us way too many years to figure out that we need to do the same thing. Bring in the best of the, I mean, you literally look at our business. All our business is people, right? We're a service business. If you don't have the quality talent to service the client, you're not going to retain clients.
Well said. Absolutely. It's funny how we don't always do what we say. So let's talk about comp then and talk about risk because I have this conversation with small recruiting firm owners all the time who want to grow. And they're like, you know, people are wanting, let's say, 80K on a base and then 50%, you know, in commission. But based on their billings, the economics don't make sense. You know, I'm not going to make any profit based on what they've built in the past and what they're asking for on comp. It just doesn't add up. So, you know, they're sort of feeling like they're stuck. They either have to take a risk on someone who may or may not actually perform and, you know, a substantial one, or they're like back to the model that you know, training people, bringing them in from other industries who are maybe more junior in their career. And, you know, but then that's a big investment to mentor and, you know, onboard and train people and so on. And that has no certainty of success either. So how have you kind of gotten around this issue of, okay, this is the comp and it takes this long to pay off, and making sure that you're investing in the right people?
So again, we have a standard that, listen, if somebody sent me a recruiter, and we're going to look at their history, right? Who billed, let's say 2022, they billed 350, and 2024, they billed 450. You know, they're showing progression. They're showing the, you know, so listen, like everything, right? That's why I don't think AI will ever replace our business. You know, we need to, what we evaluate skill sets, we evaluate performance, we evaluate motivation and drive, right? And so those kind of things, you know, I don't think you can, AI is ever going to deliver that to you. Can they give you some looks and windows into it? Maybe, you know, but my point is, again, that ultimately, you know, we're hiring experienced people. We're looking at their track record to determine, you know, there's no guarantee, but like the stock market, right? They always say, right, you know, typical, you know, future success is based upon past performance. So give me someone who's performed already, right? Give them an environment that's supportive and collaborative and, you know, they love, you know, they feel wanted and appreciated, right? Then help them grow in ways. We brought in a lot of outside people to coach and mentor and help train people where, you know, there may have been gaps and things like that. So, but ultimately, let's go back to the economics. So, and I've had people who've come to me, and usually it's on the fulfillment side because they're less risk adverse. So listen, I'm going to give you, we've played a lot with comp models that our model with the fulfillment is they have a base salary and then they get, you know, a commission plan that's a smaller percentage, right? So that now as the practice leader or, you know, the person doing the rainmaking, you know, they're going to, you know, we have a model that, you know, frankly goes up to 60% commission. So, you know, and again, I've had people say, well, a base, you know, a draw scares me. All right, well, I'll give you a base, but I'm going to change your commission structure, right? So that I'll show you a way that it makes sense to do this, you know, draw against. But if you, but I'll give it to you both ways because I'll be flexible, right? So that if somebody feels insecure about it, and again, we've done a lot of things, right? We've done where, you know, okay, it's going to take 3 months maybe before you start really building a book of business. Will we give them a ramp to cover those things? Yeah, again, we're investing for the long term so that, again, you know, listen, have we made mistakes? I mean, we let a number of people go at the end of 2024 because they weren't productive, right? There, at some point, you've got to, you know, it's a sales-oriented business and you have to produce.
Yes, absolutely. So a couple of questions out of that, one being, how long for someone who is experienced and they have a proven track record, but they're, you know, starting with you in a new environment, how long before they should, like, we expect them to do their first deal with a customer that they brought on board?
The business is about generating activity and doing the right behaviors, right? So that would I hope that someone makes a placement in 90 or 100 days? Yeah, but would I let them go if they don't? No. But I'm going to want to see them, see the activity and the work ethic, and that I know that, you know, they've got 4 or 5 searches already. It's just around the corner till one pops, right? Till they make a placement, right? But if I don't see that, we had one man who, and, you know, this, I love this man. He is a beautiful, bright, intelligent, you know, just cultural, amazing fit. We went 7 months and it just, and beyond that, he had 2 situations where we cross-sell. We do a lot of cross-selling where someone will bring in a search. This, if you're in HR and you bring in a finance search, you pass it over. Now, you don't have to. I mean, we try to create, to be flexible, but we've encouraged and really a lot of cross-selling. So this man brought in 2 searches that were cross-sold to other practice areas. But if I looked even down the road, just the behaviors were not producing what we needed, and then we just didn't think that going another month or three, we were going to get there, right? So listen, these are the decisions as partners that the four of us make, you know.
So I'd like to break this down to finding, selecting, and then, so like finding the right people. You've mentioned rec to rec. I want to learn a little more about that. Selecting, how do you give yourself the best possible chance that someone is going to work out? And then thirdly is, you mentioned retention and creating the right culture. So first of all, on the rec to rec side, any partners that you want to give a shout out to?
Well, we worked with a gentleman for a lot of years who sadly passed away. So that's a guy named John Magruder, we love John Magruder. He did an amazing job. And since then we've worked with, there's nobody that stands out. Frankly, I just got a referral on another firm that we're going to vet. And I would love to have a firm that is a strategic partner. But so far, I mean, that's why we've got, you know, three or four or five that we've used, because there's nobody that I would say, this is my go-to person today.
Okay.
Right? But that's,
okay.
You know.
Fair enough. But I think it's smart that you're willing to pay a recruiting fee, just like our clients do, in order to get access to, you know, experienced talent who are going to move the needle for you, because there's an ROI calculation there. So then in terms of choosing, you have a psychology background. You mentioned that, you know, obviously, we're trying to assess motivation and drive, which is very difficult to do. What does your hiring process look like?
So we start out with all four partners, myself, Kathy Miller, who's my wife and our CFO in the organization, then John and Steve Levitt, who I referenced. So we'll get on a call for up to an hour if we like the person. And if we don't like the person, it could be, you know, we'll give them 20 or 30 minutes and then exit that call, you know, professionally. From there, we will probably have three or more internal people spend some time with them to try to get a second and third opinions from an assessment standpoint, but also from a cultural standpoint, right, too, that we're looking for people who want to play nice in the sandbox, that want an organization that cares and shares. That's our values, that we care about people and we share collaboratively. We exchange best practices. We exchange ideas. We'll get on calls with somebody if they need help on something. So that either, you know, listen, I've seen too often in our business that it can be very cutthroaty. And I've had some people, the business is tough enough. I don't want people internally feel like they have to fight with people internally. They want to feel like, you know, people have my interest and I'm supported here, right? So that's from a cultural standpoint, that's how we build. And then ultimately, if they do well on the second levels, then we'll probably come back one more time with the partners, right? And then just to reconfirm things, sometimes probe deeper. I think if we've missed at times, we probably haven't probed deep enough on their business development skills again. So, and that's where the rubber meets the road. I mentioned this person who we let go after 7 months, right? And so he was a marvelous person, but I think in hindsight, the partners needed to do better to probe that one aspect, right? So like, obviously looking for examples, tell me your process, you know, and really spending enough time to really pull that apart so that you're as convinced as you can be. Is there a guarantee? Of course, there's not a guarantee. But so we try to be as thorough as we can on the front end. And then, you know, Steve Levitt has a technology background and he's our CIO and he's got a team of four people who work for him. And so Steve then takes over once they're hired to onboard them. They spend about a 2-week period just getting acclimated towards systems and processes and things that we have internally that, you know, more and more, if you're not system savvy, not to say you can't be successful in this business, but we think that that's also an area that you got to be able to use the tools and the technologies that we have to work within that to maximize your abilities. So that's,
definitely,
you know,
I'd love to learn more about the tools and tech in a second. First, though, 100% drilling down deeper on the business development skills, because the fact is that there are a lot of recruiters out there who are purportedly 360 recruiters, but really they're delivery people, right? But it's, you can't always tell that on the surface because, you know, and often a lot of firms are paying people as, you know, consultants, but they are delivery people. So they're mainly filling jobs, but they're earning commission on a scale that, you know, is equivalent to the business developer. And as you pointed out, that, I mean, definitely in the current market, but I think over time, the client acquisition role is the harder one, especially when it comes to finding quality business and building those accounts with, you know, repeat clients. Quick aside, are you guys retained, contingent? What's the
model? We're a blend. We do fully retained in a number of situations. We do contained in situations, and we do contingent work. So, right, again, we're not married to one approach. And we can, and that varies. Some practices are 80% retained. Some practices are 100% contingent, right? So we really, you know, we give practice leaders a lot of autonomy. Of course, we try to, you know, help them and, you know, assist them in some ways. And, you know, so.
Okay, cool. So back to the selection then. You mentioned part of the retention piece, of course, comes from choosing the right people in the first place. But are there any other techniques or anything special that you're doing? Because what you describe is pretty standard, like interviewing, Andy. I just wondered if there was either any particular tests that you administer or things that you ask them to present to you, or like, is any other assessment techniques that you use?
Yeah, listen, you know, forever. And if you go back to top grading, right? I mean, the behavioral, you know, interviewing and examples of what you've done is the way you're going to assess somebody. The, in terms of, you know, we may have them have them come back and do a business plan. You know, I'm nothing elaborate, a couple pages, but we want to see their thinking process. And again, I want to understand how they work, right? How they do things, right? So that that's something that we'll have them present to the partners. We'll also role play with them, right? We want to hear, we're going to give them some objections, be it a fee objection or be it a, you know, we'll find a couple objections and role play with them to see how they handle that, right? So that that's, and you're, listen, even the recruiters we work with, I would say 50% of the time they're sending me a 500K person believing that they're a 360 and they're really a, in your words, a delivery or a fulfillment person. So, you know, we've got to get better with the recruiters, need to get better too, which blows my mind, but it's what, listen, you know, our profession, there's people who are really good and there's just average ones too. So that's hence why I haven't found a recruiting firm that, you know, I say, man, they're my go-to firm, because I'd love to do that.
Absolutely. I mean, so what we teach our clients, Andy, is that, you know, treat your rec-to-rec partner as you yourself wish your clients treated you, right? So give them all the information, meet them, you know, take the time, really sell the opportunity to them, get them excited about recruiting for you and, you know, going out and telling recruiters about your business. You know, don't hammer them on the fee and trying to get the cheapest possible, you know, fee, because then, you know, that doesn't set them up for being super motivated to work with you, right? And ideally, what you're looking for is that person you can partner with exclusively, and they're your go-to recruiter. And maybe tell them that. Tell them, look, we're trialing a number of recruiting partners, but really, we're looking for someone we can get married with, because that's how we prefer to work with our clients. That's the way we would prefer to work with you. So, like, this trial period is really for us both to assess if this is going to be a successful partnership. And so I guess you're still looking, but aspiring towards that, I guess.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, the other, you know, our business is one where you got a client who treats you like a, you know, a hands-off vendor, and the client who values you and is working hand in glove with you and appreciates the work and, you know, that kind of. So to me, listen, I'd love that. And I just haven't come across it yet. I think that it's, to me, listen, I said when we start to interview, listen, we've paid probably 35 plus fees in the last couple of years, right? I should be an ideal client.
Absolutely.
Truthfully, I mean, I can't think of a time where when we've wanted somebody where we aren't able to get that person. I think, you know, we have a lot to offer, a lot to sell to. So when I give somebody an assignment, just like when we take it, that I think we're an A-level assignment. But again, bring me the, but we're selective too. We're going to look for what we think is the, you know, an A-level talent.
Yeah. So I like the role plays and the, you know, show me a business plan and the behavioral interviewing style. Given these are experienced people, how much evidence do you ask for? Do you look for, you know, commission checks? Do you look for league tables? Like what do you want to see from them to verify that they have done what they say?
We haven't, but we talked about this, and was because the last year we made some hiccups in 2024. So that, you know, we are thinking that we will ask for, you know, evidence of, you know, show me what you W-2'd, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I want to move into culture, because that's something which you've talked a lot about, of creating an environment which is collaborative, where you care about each other, where it is, we're going to support people. They have a lot of autonomy. Obviously, they have to also meet certain expectations and targets. But what can you elaborate some of the specific things that you do to create that sort of culture? And by the way, while you're thinking, Andy, just let me preempt. One of the biggest limiting beliefs, I think, that stops owners from scaling, they have this belief that, well, what's the point of hiring people? Because if they're any good, they're just going to set up on their own, right? I hear that so much. I'm like, but, you know, if your clients thought that way, no one would ever grow a Fortune 50 company, because how could you grow if you just assumed anyone good is going to leave and go out on their own? It doesn't kind of add up. But how do you make sure that you do retain people?
Listen, can it happen? Of course it can happen, but it starts by, I think, again, creating a culture where people know you care, right? My partner quotes me all the time and saying, actually, I think it was Teddy Roosevelt who said, people don't care about how much you know until they know how much you care, right? Again, Steve Levitt's done a great job of systematizing our onboarding, right? So we just hired a new person for our ANF team, and I spent a half an hour with him on his second day. John Levitt spent an hour with him on his first day. So a lot of touch points. We assign an internal mentor so that he or she knows that they can go to, you know, Kelly or Danielle or whoever it is, right, that they have resources there. That they feel, listen, this business is tough. And you also know that they're supported. John and I say all the time to our people, the only way to bother us is to not bother us, right? Like, I'm available 24/7 for my people. You can call me at 10 o'clock at night. I'll take that call. And certainly one of the mistakes I made plenty of years in business is, listen, as a practice leader, I got to attend to clients. But so sometimes I would not attend to internal people as much as clients, right? And so that, you know, that changed, right? I mean, somebody needs me. If I get a call from an employee, if I can't handle that now, I said, Farrah, I'll call you back in 15 and 30 minutes, or I'm tied up for an hour, then I'm going to call you back. That is top priority. If you've got to adopt it, you know, they're your client, right? So that if you want to grow a business, you got to make them important, right? So that means attention to, you know, follow up, right? Commitment, showing them you care, going and, you know, listening to personal problems if they've got personal. We brought in a lot of outside coaches for people that to work on, you know, you said something about limiting belief. Dick Vermeil is one of my favorite people. He was a football coach for many years, coached my team, which is the Eagles, and said most limitations in life are self-imposed. So that, right, like I always say about like fee objections, like the first person you need to sell is yourself. Am I worth 30%? Yes, I am. But do I truly believe it, right? Then I'm going to sell hard with the client. So again, we'll help work on people's whatever blocks they have. We're going to help try to, you know, see it first and then work on it and then overcome things, right? So we got a woman that joined us in a fulfillment capacity, and she almost didn't join us because she thought we were going to make her do BD. And a year and a half into now, she's a rock star. Now she's starting to BD, and she just brought in a search that's probably a $60,000 plus fee, right? Because she's now wanting to do it. But again, you know, it's supporting people where they are, challenging them, and also, you know, giving them ways that they can grow professionally and personally.
That's awesome. I love the shift to thinking of your employees as clients. Like, what changes with that? If you thought of your employees more like clients, what would you do differently? How would you approach those relationships differently? And I think that's a really awesome one. I like the mentorship idea and the fact you give them resources, access to coaching, and so on. Are there any other specifics, though, that you've intentionally designed in order to create that supportive culture?
Yeah, we used to have somebody called a chief fun officer, like, and we still do things where we will create internal things. We have four or five clubs. We've got a book club. We've got a parent club, you know, where people can connect over a subject matter that isn't necessarily business. There's plenty of time to connect around business topics. We structure some of those meetings as well. But, you know, we also want people to get to know people as people. We also do once a year, we do a retreat where we've done East Coast, West Coast, Middle, you know, in the last 3 years, we bring in their spouse, their children. So, you know, so that, and people, you know, again, it's just one more commitment to show that we care about the whole person, not just what you can produce.
What we know as recruiters that one of the biggest reasons people leave jobs is because they don't feel valued, right? That's like one of the top things. It's usually not to make 5K more on their base or whatever. It's some other reason. They don't feel there's a career path for them, or they don't feel appreciated. They don't feel valued. So, you know, knowing what we know as recruiters, we should be applying those lessons to our own, you know, businesses
as much as possible.
True. Yep. Quick question. Are you guys remote or in office?
We are a virtual company, right?
Interesting. And when did you make that switch, or has it always been?
Well, no. COVID forced us to. And then as Steve Levin, as the leadership team, we talked about it and decided this is a strategy that could help us grow because, yeah, I was in New Providence, New Jersey for, you know, 25 years. And so the fact that I still would love to be in an office, right? There's nothing like walking down the hall and just brainstorming with colleagues. And yet we've made it work, right? With the way we've done things that, you know, we can, you know, you can make in today's Zoom and Teams world, you make it work. So I'm proud of the fact that we have created that culture in a virtual environment.
You know, because I'm having this conversation right now with some of our clients and, you know, who have always tried to recruit locally. But if they're not finding the right person, I'm like, you know, you could have access to all the talent in the United States of America if you wanted to, right? But you're constraining that into, and I understand they want to go and physically be in person with clients, which I think definitely is an advantage if you can do that. But at the same time, are you prioritizing that over finding great talent for your own business? And maybe there's a balance there. I don't know. Were there any significant changes you had to make in order to make remote work?
What I learned is, listen, COVID taught us that, like, we do business with Hershey's. Hershey's is one of the most conservative companies in the world. Just are. And yet they were forced to allow people to work remotely and no choice during COVID. And what they learned, as many organizations learned, and we did too, is productive people are going to be productive, right? They're not going to be just, you know, spending, you know, 20 hours on the golf course or whatever you want, right? And so, and there's always metrics and ways to manage people, right? So that's what you got to have systems and things to measure productivity. But given that, like, you know, listen, why would I have, and I had it once before COVID where a guy was driving an hour to come to me. That's 2 hours a day of a lack of productivity just spending the car.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, it makes sense again, like, you know.
Absolutely. So in terms of building that high performance culture, you've mentioned a few things like, you know, metrics and so on. Like what are the, you're not micromanaging people. They're working from home and you're hiring, you know, people who are, have a lot of drive experience and you're letting them do what they do. So what metrics are you looking at in order to make sure people are on track and where they might need extra help?
You know, if you're talking about a practice leader, at the end of the day, are they making marketing calls to clients and prospects? And are they getting job orders? That's really, you know, I used to look at for many years, how many calls did you make? Like, you know, it's not bad. And I was like, and yeah, I got a woman that's worked for me for 22 or 3 years. I never look at, like, are you getting submittals? Now she's a fulfillment person. And are you getting interviews? It's as simple as that, right? If you're not, like, just and let's work on what's a challenge. It can't always be that this search is too hard, right? Because, you know, otherwise we'd never get paid. They're all hard, not all of them, but some are harder than others. But like, so let's work with what I see changes. And we've got a spreadsheet that we use a program that looks at all that. And, you know, we don't beat people up with the numbers, but we're going to look at it like what's going on. It's just haven't, you know, looks like you haven't had a search in 3 or 4 weeks. Tell me what's going on.
So on the business development side, it's just as simple as a couple of key metrics. How many conversations with clients are they having and how many new searches and the delivery? How many, you know, candidates are they presenting and how many interviews are they getting?
Yeah, and billings, of course. We look at, you know, billings, both in units of placement, it's in dollars, right? So that we look at all those things.
Okay, fantastic. What has been, from a business standpoint, as you've been growing, one of the biggest challenges, you know, it sounds like you're doing a lot of things right. Is there anything that, you know, you looking that didn't work and you had to change?
Well, I think I alluded to it earlier, right? I think that we need to improve our interview process even better than I thought. We'd done a decent job and we've hired some great talent that I'm proud of that, but there were some that got through the cracks. In hindsight, we made some mistakes. So we, as you know, we do, the partners got together and we talked about it and we've come up with some ideas on how we think. We took a pause right now in Q1 just to, you know, let the dust settle a little bit. But we'll be back hiring, you know, at some point this year. And then again, we need to implement our hiring process and improve upon that and make it even better.
Look, you're never going to have 100% success rate, right? Because we're dealing with human beings and, you know, you can't predict how that's going to play out.
Yeah, I think, you know, listen, if there's a way to do some backdoor references or, you know, we've gotten those occasionally, but not consistent. I don't know that you can do that consistently. And then, you know, references I'm going to trust are generally going to be good, but, you know, we ought to be a little bit more diligent with that as well. And you know.
Okay. All right. Fantastic. And what do you think is the, what's the next 5 years look like then? You've had so much growth in the last 5 years.
Yeah, we want to get to 20, 25 million. I think we see ourselves as a boutique of, you know, 75 people. We want to just continue to, you know, build businesses within businesses. We want to grow interim. We have some other specific ideas in terms of where we want to grow. But, you know, that's, you know, a lot of the same playbook.
Andy, a couple things then while I've got you. One is the interim side. I'm encouraging all of our clients who only do permanent placement to add some kind of recurring revenue stream, whether that is, you know, contract, interim, fractional, you know, RPO, something that's going to create monthly forecastable revenue. I'm assuming that's why you did it. But what's your strategy or thinking around that?
Well, for sure, it's a recurring revenue is nice. Listen, if you ever want to potentially, you know, be acquired, you know, you look at the multiples. Wall Street pays way more multiples with interim than perm. But I don't know that those were the primary motive. I think it was diversification again, that it's, you know, you look at if the economy gets softer, typically interim or temp roles are hotter right now. Right now, that's our hottest practice by far, right? And so, and, you know, we're also diverse in other areas. Legal does a lot of interim, accounting and finance. And then we just seven months ago made a decision but in technology, we've got two people doing interim technology right now. So
fantastic. Oh, that's cool. So speaking of technology, you mentioned your CIO and like, what are the tools and tech that you're giving people access to that you think makes a difference? Because there's so much technology out there and you can get distracted by shiny objects, but what are the things you've invested in that have actually paid off?
Everybody gets a LinkedIn seat. You know, we're a super user on Zoom Info. We hired a head of marketing and we implemented HubSpot as our CRM. So we're using that tool. And again, like I said, with new people, we're pretty insistent that they're comfortable and they adopt that day one. You know, so those, yeah, yep.
So anything else, any clever software or tools that your team really swears by?
You know, I know a couple of people are using ChatGPT and, you know, in some ways, but we're not, you know, I don't know that we are wowed by those. I mean, we've tested a lot of things, but nothing that, you know, is a wow.
Okay, nothing that's a wow. And then you mentioned also that you have certain systems and processes that people get trained on when they first join you. What is the process that you have that you're most proud of that you think is a real differentiator for your customers?
You're talking about when we bring new people in? Is that what you said?
Yeah, you said like when you bring people in, they have to learn all your systems and processes and stuff. And I was just wondering, what is an example of a system or a process that you've developed internally that you think is, you know, that you're proud of, that you think makes a difference to your people, but also to your customers?
Well, like I said, we've got a team of like called our ops team of like four or five people that they spend a lot of time. So we do a lot of handholding, right? Learning HubSpot, learning, you know, PCR, learning, you know, they don't know how to do, you know, LinkedIn or Zoom Info or whatever their need, just getting them, you know, set up in a way, then helping them do research, right? We have people that can do it for them and sometimes people want to do it themselves, but it's really, you know, just spending a lot of time with them, I guess it's as simple as that, right?
Andy, this was brilliant. I've learned a ton. Thank you so much for being on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to The Resilient Recruiter. I know how busy recruiters are, so I'm honored that you're investing this time with me each week. I don't take your attention for granted. That's why I'm going all out to deliver value for you here, real insights you can apply to improve your business. And if you really want to help me to reach a wider audience and impact more people, please consider leaving the show a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you leave me a review, please reach out and let me know so I can thank you personally. Please hit the subscribe button and I'll see you next time.